order, or everybody stand and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I think we better hold on 1 second until our clerk gets back to start our recorder.
Okay.
So that's the original. This is the resolution.
This isn't a resolution.
That's what Jackie just gave.
Resolution, I'll have to. Somehow I forgot to do the resolution, but I have a copy of the notice of the hearing that explains it. You can sign the resolution.
Would you go ahead and give us an update on the resolution?
Okay, the resolution number 700, and it's to cover grant funding for the gambling prevention and treatment. That's coming from the state Wyoming Department of Health. Sorry, I'm out of breath. And then we have a mini grant of $3,000 to the Wyoming Department of Health. It's for some training that will be expended by 731, I believe. And so that money's already been received, so once approved, we can go ahead and expend it. And then there was a general deficit correction of $100 in the library maintenance fund. And all that falls under Resolution 700, and I request approval. It has been advertised as required.
Okay. Well, I would move, or if we're going to move into a budget hearing at this time, to amend the budget for the library fund of $100. Is that the way that shakes out? So, all in favor of amending the budget, say aye.
Mr. Chairman, you need to have an opportunity for public comment.
I don't do that today. I would like to give the public a chance to comment on the budget resolution to amend the library budget. We subtract about $100 from their budget, don't we?
No, basically what happens is what they requested and we expended was $100 more than what was approved.
So
we were just short.
We're going to increase the library budget by $100. Any comments?
And Mr. Chairman, you're also increasing Fund 69 by $9,125.43 and Fund 63 by $3,000.
Oh, how come I gave you a copy? I'm so sorry. I'm on my game today, guys.
I'm kind of stumbling through it anyway. Okay, we're extending the Wyoming Department of Health budget by $9,125. We're increasing the Wyoming Department of Health budget by $3,000 and the general county by $100. Correct the budget deficit.
Total is $12,225.43.
Okay, the amount total is $12,243.43. That's not right. $12,000.43.
$12,225.43.
Okay. Is there any public comment on that? No comment. Need a motion to pay the, or to make the budget amendment.
Make a motion to approve this budget amendment
And I will second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. And we'll move on to the next item, and that is...
We need to go out of budget.
Oh, yeah, we got it. We're out of the budget here now. The Guardian ad item, was that part of the budget amendment?
No, it's not part of the budget amendment. Well, I received this from the state of Wyoming, and it's evidently a contract or a memo of understanding that we get regularly, but Chairman about me requested that we go ahead and run it through the meeting for approval since it had been a while since we had done that. I did have County Attorney Ruby review it at the last meeting, and he didn't have any issues with it. Have you seen it?
I have.
Yeah, I discussed it with Mr. Craig Owen. Doesn't look like either one of our attorneys have any problem with it, so I want to go to the public and see if there's any comment on it. If anybody wants to understand a little more about it, I can read some of it or get it available to you. It's the Western States Union Corporation. The line of Allegan, located at 822 West 23rd Street, Cheyenne, Wyoming.
I think that's the wrong document.
Oh, that's not the right one. Okay.
I'm happy to explain it if you want me to.
I would appreciate it if you would.
Yes, sir. So this is just our standard. We do these usually it's every 2 years, but it's an agreement between the Guardian Ad Litem Program and the state of Wyoming. And the county, by statute, the counties have to provide certain assistance to the Guardian Ad Litem Program. The state provides the other assistance. For example, we have to provide office space. We also share in some of the expenses of the actual underlying personnel costs. These are the cases where we assign lawyers to minors. For example, in CHINs cases, delinquency actions, or sometimes also in divorce cases, a GAO would be assigned to the children. And so that's really what it's for, setting forth our share of the costs and how those are split between the county and the state by statute.
I would like a motion to accept contract number 224500.
I'm going to make a motion to accept that.
Motion made and a second. I second it. Any comment? Any other comment on that? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Contract number 224500 is been approved by the commissioner. Next is a contract between the Department of Public Health, the Public Health Division in Johnson County. The parties to this contract are Wyoming Department of Health, Public Health Division Agency, whose address is 122 West 25th Street, floor 30, or third floor, West Cheyenne, Fun Lake Drive, Buffalo Line. Oh, wait a minute, I missed that line there. Cheyenne, Wyoming, 8202, Johnson County, whose address is 85 Fun Lake Drive, Buffalo, Wyoming. This contract contains the public health preparedness and response unit. The purpose of the purpose of the contract is set forth the terms and conditions by which the develop public health emergency preparedness and response capability in the jurisdiction through the implementation of the Center of Disease Control and Prevention in Public Health. Is there any comment on whether we should approve the contract or not. I'm looking for a motion to approve the contract.
To approve.
Is there any public comment on the contract with the Public Health Nurses Office? Okay, I'll second the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Commissioner Perry, looks like he missed the line on the agenda.
I'm looking at bicycle safety.
Bicycle pedestrian and bicycle safety. Presentation by Kristen.
Oh, sure did. Okay.
There isn't, because we don't have any handouts for it.
Oh, we don't have.
Kristen's going to present.
Who is?
Kristen.
Oh, okay. Present that for us, Kristen.
All right. So thank you for having me today, Commissioners. I just want to talk a little bit about bike and pedestrian safety. May is Bike Safety Month. And so from a public health standpoint, to put it quite frankly, we still have a lot of work to do to keep our pedestrians and our bikers safe and to provide them safe opportunities to get around town. We have some really great bike paths and trails and some really wide roads, and I know Tim's done a lot of work to bring a lot to our community. But we still have a ways to go. Our community is difficult to get around in as far as safety. And, you know, we can do everything we can to be safe as a pedestrian and as a biker in the community, but we are only as safe as the environment we can be in, right, and the vehicle next to us. So there's a few things that really pop out to me, and I certainly don't have all the answers. I just want to put this on your radar. You know, Fort Street is very difficult to cross. We've got our crosswalks down here by the stoplights, but once you go down further, it's very difficult. By the grocery stores, you've probably seen this just as much as I have. We have people kind of darting across four lanes of traffic. And especially, I mean, we have a population of quite a few elderly folks, and that's who's trying to cross down there. And so it's just not safe. We've got sidewalks, but there's a lot of connectivity issues with the sidewalks. We'll have sidewalks for a block and then no sidewalks, and then sidewalk for another house and then no sidewalks for a couple houses. So people are jumping on and off the sidewalks, or they're not using the sidewalks because it's just not feasible. We have storm drains that kind of face the wrong way in the road. So if you're on a bike, you're just waiting to get your tire caught in there and flip right over your handlebars. And quite frankly, people just don't like bikes on the road. Bikes get in the way when you're driving a car. So we have kind of a poor attitude towards bikers and pedestrians sometimes, and I would love to see that improve. From a public health side, we do everything we can to keep bikers and pedestrians safe. You know, we have helmets available for free for everybody in the community, kids, adults. We've got reflective stickers you can put on those, your bikes and your helmets. We've got education that we're always putting out and always trying to get out into the community. You know, what side of the road should you be riding your bike on? Your hand signals when you're riding a bike. How to be safe when you're a pedestrian. We are putting things out on social media. We are doing events. For example, this Friday we have a bike rodeo down at the hub, so it's going to be teaching kids how to use proper hand signals and how to be safe on their bike. We're going to be going to a Healthy Me Day at the school to, you know, teach kids the importance of wearing a helmet and being safe when they're out in town. And so from public health, we're doing what we can to make sure everybody's safe. We're doing what we can to make sure they know how to be as safe as they can be for themselves and for the vehicles on the road, because this isn't just a danger for the bikers and the pedestrians, it's a danger for drivers too. I mean, distracted driving is at an all-time high, I'm sure we can say, and we're all distracted when we drive. We really are. Whether we look down to change the radio really quick and then we look up and all of a sudden there's a family on bikes right in front of us, and we swerve, and now we've hit another vehicle, so we've got two vehicles and a family on bikes and all the other vehicles around us. This isn't just keeping the bikers safe, it's keeping everybody in the community who's trying to get somewhere safe. And you know, like I kind of said, pedestrians and bikers, they're only as safe as the path they're on. They're only as safe as the road that they're biking on and the vehicles that are next to them and paying attention for them. So we need to bring more to our community. Our community deserves more to have safer opportunities to get around. We're a tourist town. You know, we have people from out of town that don't, you know our town or our roads as well. So we really need to make, it's awesome that we've got some great paths and some great roads, but we need to make our entire town safe. We really do. Just because we have so many people either that don't know it, or sometimes you need to get somewhere else that's off the path that's already been made. So we just need, in general, a safer community and better attitudes towards bikers and pedestrians. I would love to see, I know money is always a player in things like this, and if I could have everything I wanted, I would love to see bike lanes in our town. I would love to see painted bike lanes on the road. I would love to see buffers between the sidewalk and the road. Right now, you know, bikes belong on the road. They do. That's where you should be biking. As a mom myself, I can tell you my children bike on the sidewalks. But when my child is on the sidewalk and he falls, he's falling right into the road. There's no buffer. And some of our sidewalks are pretty narrow, so there's not a lot of directions to fall. So I would love to see kind of a buffer or a wider sidewalk between the road for kids. I would love to see signs for pedestrians and bikers, just reminding people that they're out there and to be careful, to try not to, and to, you know, lower those distractions when they're driving. And I would love to see just more crossing. On Fort Street, we could use crossing. It is not fun for anybody, even as an adult, trying to cross Fort Street, not in a vehicle. It, quite frankly, it sucks. It's really difficult, and it's not safe. And I feel like if we don't do anything, eventually we will have a bad outcome. And I would hate for us to be the community that waits until we have a bad outcome with a pedestrian to take action against anything. So again, I just wanted to put this on your radar. It's Bike Safety Month through Public Health. We have a way to go, and there's a lot more I would love to do. I guess I will pause there for a moment and see if you guys have any questions or any comments about it.
I think it's an age-old problem, and I hope you can solve it. It's going to be difficult.
Yes, I think it's going to take a variety of entities coming together to do that. And I know Tim's done a lot of work, so I hope that public health can help and be part of that as well.
Did you look for grant funding or anything for some of these signs and that stuff that you're wishing that you could get? Or is there some of that that you can do?
Yeah, so like I said, this is something I'm just starting to get on everybody's radar from a public health standpoint. There's a lot more I want to do with it, like go down those different avenues. I know Tim has delved into the grant funding a lot more than I have, so I can let him speak to that and see what there might be out there. But
come on. Good morning, commissioners. Tim Cahill, Buffalo Trails Board, and Johnson County Family YMCA. Following up what Chris was saying here with getting community buy-in and support for wanting to make Buffalo a human-powered travel destination and place that supports that, the money is popping up more than it ever has before, starting with House Bill 74, passing the Wyoming Outdoor Recreation Grant. Do let your representatives know how much that means to you as this all goes in. Rules are being written here over June. Budget session means it has to be heard by 2/3 of the House that's presenting it to even be heard in a budget session. But $6 million has been earmarked currently waiting on rules. Along with the Wyoming Outdoor Recreation Trust, there's several other funds, as well as a new one in the works right now from a Ukrainian ambassador that was hit and killed by a car in D.C. recently while leaving their child's school from some programming. They're looking to build another trust and funding source for that specifically to pedestrian and bikes around the nation to make that a safer way of travel. Johnson County is uniquely positioned for that in that we are an aging community that's not getting any younger from our last demographic survey. So if we could promote pedestrian and bike safety, to the younger generation in particular, that frees up then parking spaces for our older people that want to go into the sports store, into their favorite coffee shop, if all of a sudden the 30, 40-somethings are riding a bike a little bit more. That opens up the parking areas. Through the Trails Board, we're really working hard on connectivity of our local trail systems. We're blessed in what we have. Everything originates in the heart of the city park, and from there, you can go to Tensley by connecting different trails and forest service roads, which is awesome. But we have little gaps in between there. Evan Epper's a great example. I do have a current grant pending right now with Two for the Trails out of Connecticut to try to work on that connectivity between there and the affectionately named Trail to Nowhere on Cemetery Road, which was funded with Safe Routes to School money that will connect to the 2023 Bypass Road Project funded by TAP. If all of a sudden the current trail system can connect to a safe route to school, which then ties into the next trail system down, you come across from the Cemetery Trail to Nowhere Road, and all of a sudden you're on a sidewalk in front of the elementary schools, which then takes you to the heart of the city parks, which again, as we know, is the heart of our trail system. We just made a huge step forward in pedestrians and bikes, or what I like to call human power travel, to keeping those people safe and promoting that as something that Johnson County would like to see. Another thing we've done through the Trails Boards, we've updated all of our maps, as I presented a few weeks ago, to a QR code. Those have been sent out to all sorts of local businesses as well as around the region. I just had 1,000 printed up that are going into the bags at the Dead Swede Bike Race, which will be bringing, I believe, 11 states, last I heard, almost 1,000 people. It's a little business card. Pull it up, snap a picture, bam, there's Buffalo Trail System on the map. By promoting our area as a tourist destination, which we already are, but we're not really holding people. If we could get those people to stay and play a little longer, instead of stopping by for 3 hours to have dash in, hit the sports lure, jump in the pool, and drive on, what if we could get them to stay for 3 nights? All of a sudden, there's lodging tax. There's fuel tax. This goes to fixing the pothole down the street from your house that you hate without having to increase property values in Johnson County to our taxpayers there. There's a lot of benefits. We're centrally located on a main route between the Black Hills and Yellowstone, Devil's Tower, a little over an hour away, world-renowned climbing, Tensley, world-renowned climbing. We've got great assets right here. People love to come to Buffalo. By promoting it as a bike and pedestrian friendly place right on the east slope of the Bighorns, I think we could do some really cool stuff. And now the money is there. We just need to have community support when we go write federal grants that says, hey, our community backs this up. We want to be a bike and pedestrian friendly spot, and this is what we want to do with those funds. I think we set in a really great position to do so.
Has anybody gone to YDOT and asked for different grades for those storm drains? I'm certain that they don't meet the standard today.
I'm certain that they do not as well. I actually have a friend that has been over the bars on those storm drains. And no, I have not spoken to the YDOT person since my time in the Buffalo Trails Board. They switched people about my time coming on. I've had a little trouble making that contact. And last I was with the trail that goes along from Baumgars up to Turkey Lane, that is also YDOT. It is their responsibility to deal with, and have been told that, yep, we realize it is, and someday it will happen. But it's kind of small potatoes, and right now there is limited funding. Everyone's feeling the squeeze. Things like storm drains and trails alongside of a highway that does actually have a wide shoulder are not high priority. But as roads get updated and become project ready, it's something you'll definitely see me setting in more meetings about.
Your comment about all the trail stuff being done by the TAP grants. Johnson County is the one that applies for all of the TAP grants, and we pay whatever the cost of administering all the grants. So Johnson County is working with the Trail Board and the community to upgrade the trails and take care of some of that stuff.
And that's great. We do have some really good opportunities in our town, and what we would just love to see, you know, being able to commute, you know, on the roads and being on the roads as a pedestrian. We'd love to see the safety increase on that.
you know how many bike accidents we have a year?
You know, I don't. I believe there was one up at Turkey Lane last year, 2 years ago, but I truly don't know how many we have and what the near misses are and what the calls are in them, but I can say personally, I ride my bike quite a bit, you might have seen me, and I have almost been hit various times. I've experienced very aggressive drivers that just don't believe I should be on the road, is my understanding, as a biker. I can say personally that I work in public health. I know all the safe things to do, and I've had near misses myself. And so for a kid who's still learning those things, or somebody who's just getting back on their bike and is just, you know, focused on a million other things, it's dangerous.
My kid rode all over Buffalo, but there's also ways around Buffalo that are very no traffic.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, as a parent, you take it to them and say, well, you cross over here, you know, once you pass through, you didn't retard anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Go down here and retard anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that's just education on getting around some of these things.
And I think you're totally right. I am very lucky. I bike my family to school and to daycare quite frequently, and we live on one end of the trail system and daycare's on the other end, so we take the trail, and we're very, very lucky to have that. But some people don't have that option. You know, their house is on one end of a safe spot and school is on the other end, and some people just don't have the opportunity to be quite as safe as some of us get to be.
I will say, from a trails board perspective, we want to thank the county for the addition of the crosswalks that were added last year at major spots along Klondike. That is a constant improvement, and the county has been nothing but great to work with as we've identified those spots going forward.
I know that Scott takes that safety very seriously.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You manage his effort to take care of that. Is there anybody else that's got any comments on bicycles? Like safety?
I do. Did we get any clarification on the motorized bikes?
clarification, no. Is it a great big conversation still? Yes, that is becoming more forefront. I actually went down to Laramie for the Emerging Issues Outdoor Recreation Forum a few weeks ago. It was really cool. They sold out 250 spots. About 215 people showed up from all around the state and outside of the state. Just a quick little sidebar story, is really funny. They got up, they said, welcome to Emerging Issues, the Outdoor Recreation Forum. This week's topic, people to wear flannels with a vest. And everyone looks down, and it's like 80% of the room and five guys in suits. So it was really fun, good vibe, a great group of people that all have the same questions. Is there a lot of answers? No, not yet. But you'll see one community is crushing one aspect, another one this aspect, another one this aspect, and why can't one get them all right? That answer still doesn't exist, but it's out there. There's two communities that are doing really big things on the e-bike rules right now, which is Laramie and Jackson. Yes, I know Jackson is actually southeast Idaho, but they have landed really well on what their rules are for it. Right now, Myra Camino, our city liaison, has been doing a lot of work. I know the city has been talking quite a bit to different communities. She was able to find some good resources. This is actually a major topic tomorrow night. We're doing a work session, kind of getting our thoughts together. Right now is leaning much more towards each municipality making their own rules of what they are, as well as federal land managers. I have talked to all of our federal land managers in our area. Right now, state is a hard no. E-bikes are designated to existing roads only. Forest Service and BLM also, anywhere that a motorized vehicle is allowed to be used. That said, BLM and Forest Service both recognize that the e-bike is a growing thing and we really should embrace it. There's an economic benefit as well as a health benefit to the community, and it keeps our older people out recreating longer. So it's definitely on the horizon. I'm trying to get a meeting set with Kelsey Bean right now, the new USFS recreation person, so we can talk in greater detail of what the game plans are going forward. But right now, they are considered a motorized vehicle. The state of Wyoming, through their state parks, has classified a Class 1 e-bike to be allowed to be used on non-motorized trail systems. Class 2 and 3 that have a twist throttle are still considered motorized. So there's progress, but still no real rules. But we're getting to almost have guidelines.
Cool, thank you.
Bet.
If there are any more questions, I appreciate you guys coming forward and giving us the information in the chat. When you have more, come back, please.
Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is now we can address that other stuff. Okay. So, thank you for that and letting us talk about the bike stuff. That's something we really look forward to doing more, but that kind of brings me into my next point is previously public health had a second nurse. Right now we only have one staff nurse plus myself, and in the past we had had another part-time nurse, and that's something I would really love to get back. We could really use it, and I don't know that it should have ever gone away, to be quite honest. So there's a lot we want to do, a lot we want to bring back. We'd love to do, you know, more on this public safety stuff. And we used to go down to KC multiple times a month and provide our services in KC for those folks so they don't have to come up here. And right now we just don't have the time. We don't have the staffing. We're overwhelmed. I'll give you a little bit. So there's a staffing model about how many nurses should be in each kind of health department, community health department, public health workforce. And so I did a little calculator, and I put in for our county of our size and in Wyoming, we should have 11.2 full-time people in public health. Right now we have 5. So another part-time nurse would really help us get us a little bit closer and be able to fulfill, you know, we have foundational areas in public health that we need to fulfill, that we need to bring to our community. We have communicable disease, chronic disease, maternal and child and family health, immunizations, the different clinics. We have all these things that we need to bring to public health, and right now we just don't have the nurses to do it. So I would love to bring our part-time nurse back. Just to give you kind of a rough estimate, at 20 hours a week, that would be looking at under $28,000 a year. For the next year, we've got a little bit of COVID money left, so anything that they do for COVID outreach efforts, COVID vaccinations, our COVID grant will reimburse. If they do any MCH, maternal child health stuff, we can get that reimbursed to a point as well. So we have a little bit of money, but our request is that kind of the county would take this over. I wanted to run this past you guys, and I can come back with more numbers if you need, but I wanted to see if it's an option, if it's a possibility, what we might need to do to look into that.
How many people are you seeing on a daily basis?
Oh, that's a hard answer. It really varies depending on if we're doing clinic or home visits, or we do LT assessments for Medicaid, and just throughout the year it really varies. You know, when we hit flu clinic, we can see 50 to 100 on a day. When we get, you know, every time we get a new COVID booster authorized, we get a really big push again. Some of our LT assessments that we have to do, so we go into the home and do assessments for their Medicaid waivers, we're starting to see more and more of those just as our community ages and as our population ages. And then also with the movement up at the vet's home, we are having to redo all of those LTs and get them on a new cycle. So that's just giving us more. So I don't totally have a number. I can kind of get like a quarterly estimate for you
that's
if you want.
Exactly what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Quarterly estimate.
Yes. And kind of show you
how that works and what that is, I think would be
yes.
helpful. Don't you, Bob?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
It sounds like there's enough work for another person.
Yes, we can absolutely make more work for another person too, but I think their schedule will naturally fill up. And our hope too is, you know, we get another person in there, we can see more people and bring in more revenue. So.
Well, and I would like to see, you know, if we can at least get down to KC.
Absolutely.
I think would be great.
Absolutely. I would love to get down there every other week, weekly. Whatever they need, I'm sure our schedule would fill up very quickly.
I know that the senior district has been going down there and doing a lot of work with KC folks, and the need is definitely there.
Mm-hmm. And we have a need, too, just for more services for our seniors that we would love to bring in. But we don't have the time right now, so.
Well, that might be something that they could, you know, piggyback together or meet every other week. You know, that way there's something that every week might be a good conversation to have. Let me see what they're doing down there.
Yeah.
And have them be assisted or have them.
Yeah. So on that, another thing that we are looking to provide you guys, actually, we heard there's some interest in from the commissioners that, of getting Narcan in every county building. Are you guys familiar with this conversation that was had? Okay. So I guess I just wanted to get a little more information from you guys on what you're looking for as far as Narcan. Do you want it in the county buildings in case there's an emergency in the county building, kind of with AED? Or do you want it accessible to the public so that the, if anybody in the county needs Narcan, they can come in and get some Narcan? What are we looking for?
I thought it, the way I understood the conversation was to have Narcan available in the building in case
okay.
there's somebody that is actually needing our Narcan administered. I
okay.
guess there's no danger to administering Narcan.
No.
We feel like we should have it available in case we have somebody that is exposed to fentanyl or...
Yeah. And I can definitely get that for you, just to give you a little quick snippet of what that would look like. We would just need to get a new standing order signed by our CHO, so signed by Dr. Schuler, and I have the standing order so I can get that to him. I'll request the Narcan from the state, and then we also have to have people in each building trained, and I can pass that training along or provide it. That's just kind of what that'll look like.
What does that training consist of? How many hours?
You know, I don't know the hours. I don't imagine it's a lot. I think it's fairly brief, but it's just kind of how to use the Narcan, how to properly check it and store it and check for expiration dates, and then what signs might you look for to need to administer it.
That would probably fall to either the clerk or the treasurer's office to, because you're
and
down.
And I'm always that clerk.
Yeah. Well, you're down there where the bulk of people are too. They're either coming
correct.
By license plates or give a title or report a document. And we see 10 people up here, they see 200.
Yeah. So I'll get you everything you guys need for that, and I'll let you know when we got stuff. Okay.
Thank you,
Commissioners.
Thank you. Okay. Moving right along. Review draft agreement with the Game and Fish for the walk-in area. The walk-in area is the land that the county owns around the airport. We have an outstanding agreement with the Game and Fish for walk-in only, and it's strictly an archery area. We review this document every year and sign it. So, do I have a motion to approve the walk-in agreement with the Game and Fish?
Mr. Chairman, actually, I don't think we're approving the agreement today for signature. What we need to do is just look it over and make sure it looks good. This one, if you want it archery only, we need to indicate that because that's not in the agreement currently. It's a 5-year agreement, which our last one was as well. You can get out of it, I think, on 30 days notice.
Yes,
so it's not a big deal, but I think it's a 5-year term. Game and Fish. Just wanted us to look at it. If it looks agreeable, then we'll get back to them, let them know, and they'll give us a formal draft for signature. It has to get approved by the Attorney General's office and the commission first.
What's everybody's thought on being able to use rifles in that walk-in area? I personally think that it's probably not good. The housing developments all the way around the airport, plus the aircraft coming in and going out.
Well, I didn't see when I read through that anything about just Archer Hill.
It probably isn't there. For some reason, I thought that the last time...
It is. It currently is archery only.
Oh, okay.
The current agreement is archery only. If you go to attachment A towards the end, right before the map, it says weapon choice decided by county commission. But I think our last one actually said, rather than that, it said limited to archery only.
That was my
record. It should be.
Yeah, there's way too much housing.
In that time of year, you can't do black powder if you're just going to start a fire.
Yeah. So. Is there any other comments on the Walk County agreement that the county has with the state of Wyoming? If anybody would like to review this map, we've got a small map of the area. Altogether, there's about, I think the county has about 600 acres out there. That most of it would be comprised of the airport and the runway itself. It's all fenced off. There's 170, I think, outside the fence that encompasses that walk-in area. That land we do lease to the individual for grazing. So it has to be respectful of the livestock that might be in there. Okay.
Well, we need to word that difference in marriage.
We don't even need to have any wording on it.
We can. I mean, if you wanted archery only, I think we just put that right in the agreement. Rather than weapon choice, I think it just should say limited to archery.
Yeah, I think it ought to be.
And we'll just mention that to Troy. That's who we're dealing with, is Troy Tobias. So Bill or I can call him if he's letting know we have a problem with the contract, except we wanted to say archery only.
Okay. Well, if there are any other recommendations, we'll move forward to draft agreement American Legion catering permit. Okay, we have an application from American Legion Post 13 is requesting your consideration of a malt beverage license for Johnson County Fair and Rodeo August 5th and 6th, 2023. The license will be used to sell malt beverages during the Johnson County Fair and Rodeo. We would like to set up two stands under the grandstands and behind the bucking chute area during the rodeo performance. Do you find a $20 fee? And it's important. Madam Clerk, did you receive?
Yes, we did.
Okay. So we have a malt beverage permit for the American Legion for 2 days during the rodeo.
Motion to approve.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the catering permit or the malt beverage permit? I second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Tisdale Mountain Tower Agreement. We have a repeater station on Tisdale Mountain. There's a new owner out there, Mr. Morrison, and he sent us a letter requesting that we revisit the license and don't think there were any changes made to it, was there, Mary?
Marilyn, do you want to come up with it?
Yeah, thank you. So what's happened is Mr. Morrison has purchased the property.
property from KC Land and Livestock. Our agreement was with KC Land and Livestock, so we need to draft either something similar or in some of the language anyway, but what's happening is that Mr. Morrison would like to see the lease go up to $500 a year instead of $100. So I wanted to, he's got some documentation there, and I wanted to bring it to the commissioners to find out how we want to proceed with that. And I contacted him because the lease payment is due. And I knew that the land had changed ownership, so I didn't know for sure where to send the lease payment. So I got a hold of him, and he got back to me, and he said he hasn't seen the original lease on the tower after he purchased the property. So, but he did say... he thought $500 would be annually would be a lot more palatable than $100. So I told him I'd get with the commissioners, have the attorneys kind of draft something up, and go from there. But the only difference is the $500 to $100.
$400. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it's a lot cheaper to pay $500 more than it is to go to battle with him and have a similar situation we have with the tower. Fully supporting the $500. What do you think, Mr. Grego?
Well, I just have a question for Marilyn. Do we sublease any part of that tower?
In the agreement that we had with KC Land and Livestock, there's a portion in there that says if we do, then we need to pay that landowner X amount.
Half.
But
right now we
do. No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it might be easiest if I just draft a new agreement. You and I did one decade ago with Smith,
mm-hmm.
and so I think we can use that form very similar. So I'll just get one put together, a new one that we can accord and go from there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we won't do it. We won't act on this until the next meeting.
No, as long as you guys are fine with the $500, I'll get the document put together for the next meeting. Sign it then.
How do you feel, Marilyn?
I feel great.
Yeah. Well, I don't think.
I think that's fine. And
not a fight that we want.
No, no, and we don't want to lose that tower. So
yeah.
I appreciate that.
Is that what Marilyn would put in her budget, or I would put in my budget? The 430 budget. The extra $400.
You'd have to put it.
Put it in
the radio maintenance line.
Got it. Thank you.
And as far as towers go, I contacted Mr. Sullivan, that's the new owner of where the Windy Ridge Tower sits. He said he's too busy to meet right now, but that later, maybe towards the middle of the summer, that he'd have more time get together, but he said to go ahead and operate on our current lease agreement.
Good.
So that's all I have for towers.
Very good. Thank you, Marilyn.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your hard work.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got a request from the library director for to waive the hiring freeze. I assume they had somebody resign.
Did I have Lindsay?
Hi. Thank you, guys, for
saying.
Yes, we did. We received a resignation yesterday. It was an expected resignation, so we're just requesting permission to fill that position.
Well, I think that do we need a motion on that? Okay, we need a motion to waive the hiring freeze for the library to replace the personnel of the library.
And make a motion to waive the hiring freeze of the library.
Okay, and I'll second that motion. Is there any public comment? Anybody out there think there's any reason not to keep people in the library? Okay, I'll second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion granted.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate the support.
Thanks.
We'll see you next Monday, right?
Yes.
Okay, we move into an area of public comment.
Mr. Chairman, you have one more contract. And it's a public health contract. It's not on the agenda, but it's in your staff, and it's for the public health officer, the county public health officer. Excuse me, the county health officer.
Oh,
CHO. And it's our annual contract for that. It's a $10,000 contract. It's the one we do every single year.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I used it.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't do it. Okay, we've got a public health contract for $10,000 for public health. We have a motion to approve that contract, 230918.
We have a contract for 230918.
Is there any public comment on public health contract? I second the motion, and okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, motion approved. Okay, we've had public comment, so I entertain a motion.
You didn't have public comment.
I did already. I had it ahead of the contract. Okay, is there any public comment?
On specifically that or anything else?
Anything.
Oh, yes, actually. I want to introduce myself. My name is Laura Ulrich. I'm the new president of the board of directors for the animal shelter here in town. My goal, I just got elected in January. I think the previous boards maybe didn't reach out as much and network with you guys as much as they should have. So I'm hoping to change that. So I wanted to, if I could, give you all each a copy of our 2022 annual report so you can see what it is that we do. Laura, L-A-U-R-A.
And
Ulrich, U-L-R-I-C-H. I didn't know Mr. Gavotti wasn't going to be here, but I'll give you a copy. Okay. And there's, I haven't gotten any business cards, I apologize. There you go. So we did submit a budget request this year. The county pays $300 a month to the shelter for services rendered. That amount has not changed since 2014. So we did request a $200 a month increase. Last year, the county portion accounted for 1.7% of our overall funds. We thought a $200 increase was pretty reasonable, given that we haven't had an increase in 9 years. I will start coming to your meetings regularly. If I'm not available, I'll have somebody else from the board come. If there's information that you would like to hear from us regularly, any questions that you have about how the shelter operates or anything like that, I am more than happy to answer them for you.
So you guys are all volunteer, but...
No, we have paid staff. We used to be all volunteer.
Yeah, and so you have two paid staff?
We have one full-time person and... Right now, I think we have 5 part-time people. Several of our part-time people, kind of like everybody knows, hiring people is a bit difficult. So we have like 2 employees that work like 4 hours a week that come in. So we have some people who work more than others, but only one full-time and the rest are part-time.
In your 5 days a week?
We're 7 days a week. I mean, because if we have animals, you know, like Christmas Day, we're like the police department. The animals have to be fed. The animals have to be, you know, we have to be there all the time.
But I can walk in there Monday through Friday?
Not right now, no, because of our budget. We just had to change in anticipation of some possible cuts from the city. We are now currently open by appointment only, which is sadly what a lot of people have had to go to. Due to staffing and cost issues. We just changed temporarily, we hope, right now we're open to the public 10 to 4 on Fridays, and all the other days of the week are by appointment only. We hope to be able to go back to being open to the public Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, but we'll have to see.
Do you guys offer the dog chipping?
Microchipping or city licenses or
the microchipping.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I don't quite understand going from being open 3 days a week to just slamming the door shut.
Yeah.
And you haven't incurred any of those.
No, just the not yet. No, but
it'll be quite a while before you do.
It'll be 6 weeks before we do. Our contract with the city expires June 30th.
Okay.
And we were just notified Thursday, so we only have 6 weeks to prepare for if it goes through a 78% cut in our funding. So either we take you know semi drastic measures now, or we take really drastic measures July 1st. So the board decides.
78%.
Yes. So we're preparing for that, hoping it doesn't happen, but preparing for it. So again, I will be here regularly. If there's information that you would like from the shelter about what we're doing or activities that we're doing, please feel free to. My email's on that card. Please feel free to reach out and let me know. That's all I have. I was just introducing myself.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
How many dogs and cats a month do you take in to rehab?
Oh, gosh. It varies by the month. We're just getting into kitten season, so we're getting into our kind of crazy busy season. We've already had, let me think, six. We're already up to about 15 kittens. So far, for some reason, we seem to run about a month behind Casper and Sheridan. I don't know why. And Gillette, they've already all started. They're inundated with kittens. For some reason, we don't start really until June is when we get hit really bad. And they all seem to stop about September, whereas we go through November. So I don't know what it is here that makes that different. So we're just coming out of the slower time of the year for intakes. The majority of our intakes are strays, you know, people that find them and get turned in. The second biggest contributor is owner surrenders. You know, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of rental or pet-friendly rentals in town. And we also have, you know, an aging population who, when they have to go into a care facility, doesn't have friends or family here to take their animals. And we're kind of their last resort. We are the only really true no-kill shelter in Northeast Wyoming, so we have a lot of people that really want to come to us because they obviously don't, you know, they've had their animal for years and they don't want to see it put down if it can't get adopted out. And we won't euthanize for space. That's always been our policy.
I do have. So last week I had a friend here from Oregon. Her mom's in Sheridan and she surrendered her cat, but she surrendered it to you guys because it was like a half.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
So that could get to be a huge problem for you guys being a dummy parent if you guys are that.
It can. And we try to balance, we've gone back and forth with this. If we raise our fees, then we have more animals dumped because people don't want to pay the increased fee. If we lower the fee, then we're losing money, but the animals are getting dumped, which creates an issue for us down the road, you know, with unfixed animals that are out there overpopulating again. So when we have raised our fees in the past, and we have this argument every year, we notice that more animals are being dumped and then coming in as strays that are obviously not feral cats or, you know, these animals were obviously cared for and belonged to somebody. So that's an ongoing battle that the board fights about. Do we raise our fees and risk people just dumping them? Because sadly, that has happened.
Could you just have them bring a power bill so you can deliver from Buffalo over
here? I'm sorry, could we have them bring a
power bill or an AMU bill or something so you knew that they were actual resident?
We could.
Charge out of county higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. Yeah, so we try not to take from out of county because we don't obviously want to short the Buffalo residents, you know. But again, it depends on our population at the time. If we don't have a lot of animals and we can tell that if we don't take this animal, it's going to get dumped, you know, or something worse is going to happen to it, we will take it. You know, nobody gets into animal rescue for the money. That's just not what we're in there for. But, yeah, we've looked at several of those different options to talk about different options. We don't get, honestly, a ton of out-of-county surrenders. Most everybody here is pretty good about taking them, but when they get completely full, like the higher population centers are, Gillette is completely full, Sheridan is completely full, they will come to us. And we will take it because we don't want to see it get dumped. But that's it. It's an ongoing discussion we have about fees versus, you know, the benefit to the community.
Yeah, with your revenue crisis, it's going to, you'll have to resort to raising money someplace.
Yeah, the majority of our funds do come from fundraising. As you can see on there, the city and county money is not the huge portion of our budget. The city only makes up about 7% of our budget. So we do a lot of fundraisers, but again, like everybody with the economy now, we've actually managed this year, since January, we have managed to cut our operating costs by 14%, which I'm pretty proud of, given double-digit inflation that we've been dealing with. Unfortunately, our donations are down 20% over the same time last year because people are feeling the pinch. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to streamline our processes to cut our cost. But, of course, cutting costs means not taking animals that we want to take because, you know, caring for an animal takes people and staff and food and medical care. So we're you know, doing the balance that everybody else does, trying to pick and choose where we want to cut and where we can cut.
Well, we consider your request.
Okay. Thank you. If there's my email's on that card. If you have any questions or any information you would like regularly, please just let me know and I will bring that for you. I apologize, I'm getting over a cold, so I'm a little nasally sounding. Thank you.
Lord, do you have a spare copy of that?
Yeah.
Robert. Commissioners, Robert Garrison, and I want to speak to two things, if I may, quickly on public. One, I really encourage the commissioners to consider the needs of the animal shelter. We support them different ways. I have my St. Francis t-shirt on underneath here. I really did. You know, they help so many ways. In the county, feral cats, we've adopted. You know, we get overrun. I hate to be like one place I know in Hawaii where there's more cats than there are people. But they do a great work, and every dollar is needed because it's a public safety, public health, nuisance control. A lot of things, if the dogs get picked up by the sheriff's department, police department, where do they go? So they have hidden costs. So I really help hope to consider that. The real thing that I wanted to ask and bring to you, there's a lot of people that are concerned with property tax, you know me. And there's a couple of programs that I don't think the county, I can't find it, has implemented. We did see the legislative session extend with appropriations, the tax rebate program. There is also a county optional tax rebate program. I don't think you can implement it in time of June 1st. It was, I mentioned it during the Board of Equalization last fall. But there's another program with a deadline of July 1st called the Tax Deferral Program. I'm looking for a few people. I only need 10 to petition the commissioners, which would require a public hearing unless you've acted, for a tax deferral program, which allows qualified individuals to pay half their tax. The other is deferred as a permanent lien, perpetual lien on their property. And that may be an alternative to help those that are qualified that are really suffering with the third year in a row of exorbitant increases of their assessment and hence the property tax. Thank you.
I need to back up. Just thank you, Robert, for your input. I didn't ask for approval of May 22nd minutes. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the comments. I need a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion to adjourn.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Come back again. See you again. Thank you.